We hope.
That's what you say. But what I'm really going to say is, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mac Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host, and I am sitting in for you and Rankin. And it is awesome to get to hang out with amazing people here on a Friday. And yeah, what a great way to kick off the weekend. I say that a lot, but it's true. So I'm sitting here talking about amazing people. Let's find out who's here. It'll be a surprise as I look at each person and say, Ben, how are you? Oh my gosh, that means Ben's here.
Whoa, I'm still looking for these amazing people. All I see is us.
Well, we have to start somewhere, Ben.
This is true, but it's a lovely fall Friday, and I'm thankful to be here instead of outside.
Well, I am glad you're here. Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing well too. It's been a long day already, but I'm okay. Happy for the weekend and looking forward to my trip to Portugal next week. So
I want to go to Portugal at some point.
You really should. It's really beautiful.
Everyone I know that has been says I need to go. It's beautiful and I will absolutely love it.
Yes, fully agree.
All right. So it is definitely
European
on my list.
Road trip, right?
Sounds great. Yep. Yeah. And Chuck, how are you?
I am great, Jeff. It's Friday and I have not gotten nearly enough done this week. So I think it's going to be a working weekend just for the office and for me too, because it just seems like I keep knocking things off the top of my to-do list and people keep stacking them on the bottom and at a rate faster than I can get to them. So unfortunately that includes me that's sticking them on the bottom.
Yeah, that's usually how it works. Like, I mean, at some point I decided I should just stop doing meetings because out of every meeting, there's at least one to-do item for me.
Oh yeah, then you should. You can increase your productivity, Patrice, by just abandoning meetings.
Yeah, that's just the productivity. I can shorten my to-do list.
Right,
and work all together.
You could accomplish so many other things if you didn't have to work. Chuck, you should stop sticking things to your bottom. Just saying.
For a second there, I wasn't sure what you meant. Then I realized what I said. So, okay. I'm with you.
Ewan keeps letting me come back every single week.
Yes.
You know, folks, I want you to stop and think about that. Now, did any of you think about it the way Jeff thought about it? I mean, no. It just shows you how Jeff's mind works.
That's so sweet. Hey, okay. Well, I mean, we're here, so we might as well talk some Mac and Apple News stuff. So let's start off with the obligatory new iPhone gate issue, because there has to be a gate every year, which to me is just absolutely crazy. All of this stemming from the Watergate hearings, which most people don't realize, I think don't realize, is that Watergate is an apartment complex building in Washington, D.C., or just outside Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Personally, I'm just waiting for the gate concerning Apple's parking ramp.
Oh, yeah, the gate. We need the gate.
It might not take Apple Pay.
Oh no.
That would be a gate. Yes. Anyhow, this year's obligatory iPhone scandal issue, because the media has to find one every single year, is iPhone 15 overheat gate. And so the thing is some people started reporting after getting their iPhone 15 Pros that they were getting hotter than they expected. And yeah.
Yeah. I like the headline that the Daring Fireball, I think they picked. Like overheat gate is a nothing burger.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yes.
I like that. Yeah, it turns out, I mean, one, it was a few people, not everybody. It wasn't a big issue. I think Apple said even, well, they've identified a couple of apps and a couple of system things that seem to be running maybe with more resources than they should, and they just addressed that. So, kind of boring.
Yeah. Yeah. So, here's the post that became the impetus for Overheatgate. And this comes from, and I'm trying to not roll my eyes because I'll roll them too far and detach my retinas, Ming Chi Ko.
Oh, yes.
And he says...
You mean the supply chain guy?
Yeah.
Yes. The spokesperson for TSMC, right?
Yes.
That's the guy?
That's the guy. Yeah. Okay, here's what he says. My survey indicates that the iPhone 15 Pro series overheating issues are unrelated to TSMC's advanced 3-nanometer node. The primary cause is more likely the compromises made in the thermal system designed to achieve a lighter weight, such as the reduced heat dissipation area and the use of a titanium frame, which negatively impacts thermal efficiency. It's expected that Apple will address this through software updates, but improvements may be limited unless Apple lowers processor performance. If Apple does not properly address this issue, it could negatively impact shipments over the product life cycle of the iPhone 15 Pro series. Holy forking shirt balls, seriously?
Yes. Yeah. The funny thing was that kind of contradicted what the other people were seeing. I mean, it's like there were tests where people were opening like random apps and like measuring the temperature, and it was like, yeah, okay, like maybe a little bit more, but not much. And then they would open Instagram, was one of the big examples, and all of a sudden shut up. And then some other apps were fine again, and then there was another app that did it. So it was clearly something happening in software,
yeah.
Which, I mean, is not a surprise.
Yeah, and new iPhones, and new can also include a factory reset of an iPhone.
Yep.
They tend to run warmer the first few days you have them. This is not new. And that's because there's a lot of background stuff that's happening. Yeah. But yeah, you may not even notice that it's warmer than it typically is. Yeah.
I couldn't tell.
There's one word in that what you just read, Jeff, that is like the kiss of death, in my opinion. And we talk about it with the tech press. When you see it in a headline there, it's clickbait.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the word could. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if the sun went supernova tomorrow, it could affect Apple's ability to meet its next quarterly goals.
Yeah, true.
And unfortunately, you know, certain analysts, and Ming Chi Kuo is among them, you know, seem to have the ability to command this, you know, I don't even know what to call it. But this prognostication capability that people seem to glom onto.
I mean, Patrice and I had a word for it, but we can't say it on this show.
Well, who knows? And it just, I mean, I feel like there, I know it can't be, but if there was ever a time to have lawsuits or whatever, I feel like, you know, as an Apple shareholder, you know, this affected the Apple share price.
It did, yes.
And, you know, and so just because he says so, you know, with a track record that is not bad, but also not 100%. And it just feels like these guys are just anxious to be the first ones out of the gate to call something and therefore get their name in the, well, not the papers anymore, on the websites, I guess.
Yeah.
And it bothers me a whole lot that there is this much attention to pay to any of these jokers. And yet they pay attention to each other, and then the institutional investors pay attention, and then you see the stock price get hit for no real good reason. In fact, maybe not even a reason.
I'm going to read from John Gruber's piece. Yes, I do love that he calls this a nothing burger. Okay. Mm-hmm. So here's a paragraph from John's piece. Not only is the titanium frame of the iPhone 15 Pro models not an issue cooling-wise, but Apple told me, and I have no reason to doubt, that the iPhone 15 Pro and Pro Max are better at heat dissipation than any previous iPhone that used a stainless steel frame. There is absolutely nothing wrong, and in fact, much that is good with the heat dissipation of the titanium frame, and Apple has no plan to in any way throttle the A17's performance. They have bugs to fix in iOS 17. That is all.
Yep.
And there you go. Welcome to Nothing Burger Town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like any computer. When you use it a lot, it gets warm.
Mm-hmm.
Even, I mean, in Intel's case, like, sometimes so hot you can hold it. Like,
mm-hmm. Yes, when I had an Intel MacBook Pro, like that, so. the fans mm-hmm. ran all the time to deal with heat dissipation. It's just a thing.
Yeah, and even that wasn't enough.
No.
And so let's just for a second pretend that this was an issue, that the overheating thing was an issue. If Apple had been unable to fix it or offer a solution, then maybe it becomes a story. But, and I said maybe, you know, but here
it could.
In this scenario, could? Yeah, could. You know,
Mm-hmm. Could.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, this is the Allen Iverson of tech quotes.
Yeah, Patrice, nothing burger.
Mm-hmm. Nothing burger.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like he even has some examples. Like there was apparently with Instagram, there was like a video where, like, it was burning through 1% of battery in a minute.
Yeah, that's an Instagram problem. Tells you
it's not the heat problem; it's actually a CPU running amok problem.
And Apple has already released 17.0.3. Mm-hmm. Which does address, at least to some degree, the issue. Mm-hmm. I still haven't been able to update to an iPhone 15 Pro. Thank you, availability. I don't have heat issues on my 12 Pro. And I would expect that my processor is having to work a lot harder compared to the processor in a 15 Pro, because it has to do more with less, in essence.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, Apple was able to roll out a software update really fast. And honestly, my feeling is the headline for the all the sites covering iOS 17.0.3 being dropped out for all of us shouldn't be, iOS 17.0.3 addresses heat issues and has other things. The headline should be iOS 17.0.3. What would be a good way to put it? iOS 17.0.3 includes significant security patches, improvements for enterprise management, and also addresses the heat issue.
Yeah.
I would add to that, that was falsely reported by Ming-Chi Kuo.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, Apple would never say that, but yeah.
No, but yeah. I just did.
Yeah, no, yes, it's totally right. Yeah, it's... Yeah, I mean, is it a surprise, and Gruber makes that point, that some apps that, I mean, it was apparently Uber and Instagram were like the big culprits, or at least most well-known because everybody has them. That like apps that are kind of a really weird mishmash between like web technologies and like hacked together stuff, that those apps would be a problem, that probably also do some stuff in the background that they probably shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Uber is known for that. So. And Instagram, I mean, it's Meta, so like,
mm-hmm.
They've done that too. So, surprise? I don't think so. I mean, the surprise is, and that was probably the bug, that iOS didn't catch that and just stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, my guess is that iOS 17.0.3 addresses that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, clearly, because Apple can't fix their apps, but Apple can stop them from just using so much resources.
I feel like every analyst, and maybe actually now that I think about it, maybe they do. We just don't see them because we see the quotes. But anytime an analyst puts something out, there should be a warning label.
Yes and no. I mean,
yeah.
Warning, I think some analysts do that. Butt. No, some analysts do that in a way, but they do it. It's always going to be a prediction, which like is never going to be 100%. And you can address that in your prediction, but not by using could and maybe and words like that. But by saying, okay, like historically, this is how it has happened. This is the experience we have. This is the data we have. And this is what we think this will, like, how this will continue.
In our opinion.
You can do that. Well, in our opinion. Yeah, that's what they usually.
It goes beyond that, though, because analysts that are including their disclaimer, that's great. But mm-hmm. the media that's reporting on those comments mm-hmm. oftentimes will disregard the disclaimer and report the prediction, the estimate, whatever it is, as a solid fact and not what it actually is.
But in this case, it didn't matter because what Ming-Chi Kuo said was already problematic. Like he basically said, well, it's not TSMC, so it must be Apple. Like that was kind of the thing.
It and said, that's oh, a yeah, big
it
must leap. Be
Apple, and the only way Apple can do it is this and this. Like and not taking the full picture into account and not being like based on anything reasonable. It's just, oh, it's not us, so it must be them. Like, okay.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, that's the problem. And no disclaimer would help with that.
Yeah. That's true. Yep.
But it's funny how you don't see those sites that were running these things. I mean, they do report that 17.0.3 will address them. So I guess that's their way of doing a mea culpa or a correction or something. But that still feels
it's kind of
that
weak.
That too feels like a nothing burger.
Yeah. I feel like the most appropriate coverage of the Nothing Burger Gate actually did come from Gruber, just straight up calling it a Nothing Burger to start with, mm-hmm. and then giving us the context for why it's a Nothing Burger.
Yeah.
So good on John.
Yep. Good job, John. Take a cookie out of the cookie jar.
That's right. All right, well, let's talk about something more fun. And this more fun topic is what's new that's coming to Apple TV Plus. Yeah. So Macworld, they had a nice little list of what's coming soon. And so that's the link that I dropped into the chat. And, you know, if for the people that said that Apple is going to fail in this space, each time we get a list of new content coming to Apple TV Plus, mm-hmm. it feels to me like it's proving them wrong yet again, because mm-hmm. we keep getting this quality stuff. You don't have to like everything. And that's okay. If Apple rolls out a list of shows and movies mm-hmm. and you like every single thing in there, that's when you need to get worried, because it means that they're not releasing content for a wider audience, meaning different things will appeal to different people. So if they're appealing to only one demographic, then that's a very difficult way to maintain a service.
No, not necessarily. And I think Apple is being very smart about that. I mean, it's not a single demographic, but it's also not doing everything for everyone.
Yeah. Oh, yes. They're being very intelligent about how they're going into this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a mistake that some others have made where they try to do everything for, I mean, basically competing with Netflix, which they do everything for, or kind of did at least everything for everybody. But they were kind of first and the only, like, well, not technically first, but like first to reach that point and kind of the only player in the game currently in that particular game. So Apple is being quite smart to say, okay, we're going to focus on quality. We're going to focus on certain segments of people that probably align with their core audience anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And let the others do their thing. And very successful. I heard somewhere on another podcast, I think earlier this week, that Apple has one of the lowest drop-off rates, like cancellation rates currently.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that they haven't canceled anything. They have. Like Ted Lasso, for example. But so far, they've been very few, like, complete misses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in many cases, or at least in some of the cases, when a show is done for Apple TV Plus, like with Ted Lasso,
yeah,
they went into it knowing they had a set number of seasons that they wanted to do to tell this whole story, and it was a three season story, and they did that.
Yeah, it sounded more like the creator said, "Okay, we're done with this." Then, like, the Apple actually saying you have to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know. Maybe a little bit of both, but at least it didn't sound like it.
Well, during season one, there was talk about it just being three seasons. So, yeah, I think this is more on the writers, producers, as opposed to Apple.
Knowing when to stop. But as I said, it wasn't Apple canceled it. It was simply the creators knowing simply when it's the right time to stop and finish this.
And, you know, Patrice, even if it is a little bit of both, even if it's Apple, and look, I know there's a point where you just say we cannot throw money into something that is just guaranteed to lose it. But it feels like Apple is showing a bit more respect to the writers, the actors, but most importantly to the audience of saying, we're going to give them time, maybe not even a full season, but we're going to give them time to wrap up the story or at least bring it to a conclusion instead of these abrupt chops that you see all the other services doing.
The Netflix, two seasons and you're done.
Or sometimes one season and you're done. You know, there's nothing more unsatisfying than wanting to know what happened. You know, even if you just said, okay, you know, the door opened, somebody shot them, and they're dead. Okay, that's fine. But, you know, at least do that and finish it up as opposed to just leaving you out there hanging. So I have to say, you know, this, I had not seen this list. This list probably has more things that I would be inclined to take a look at than any of the other lists. And it's a tribute to, I mean, for this one, they're playing very much to me. Some other lists of past upcoming releases have, maybe there's one that has interested me. So, but look at the people they have here, these actors, and the premises are of these things are wide and varied.
Yeah. And I mean, if you want to say they're lacking star power, they have freaking Martin Scorsese and Godzilla on this list. How much bigger of a stars do you need?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, in Godzilla's case, literally.
Right. Yeah. There are shows and movies on this list that I've been looking forward to for a while because we've been getting information about them for a while. Like the Pigeon Tunnel. Which is the British spy.
Yes. Yeah.
That became a writer. The guy that wrote Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Yeah.
David Cromwell. That.
Thank
who
you.
Wrote under John, who wrote under John le Carré.
Yes, that's it. Legacy of Munsters. Yeah. I mean, they're taking the Godzilla whole movie franchise thing. So it was Godzilla, King Kong, and they're carrying that forward as a series.
Yeah.
Which sounds really interesting. Napoleon.
Yeah, from Ridley Scott and Joaquin Phoenix.
Mm-hmm. Also, Argyle looks like it's going to be wonderful fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a little bit further out. We don't know yet. Or actually, we do know. February.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit further out. But yeah, I mean, is everything Apple does a smash hit? No.
Like, no.
Can't be.
Well, no. Well, that's an example you guys wouldn't appreciate. But if every single thing you do is hitting it out of the park, you're not trying enough things.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it is a creative thing, and not everything you do, like, you might enjoy it. Ask any actor or director, you say, oh yeah, like, I can never tell if something is successful or not. Like, the things I think are successful completely bomb, and the things I think I'm not sure, all of a sudden they're successful. Like, you can never fully predict that. You can try to stack the cards in your favor, but you can never predict that. And that means that some things will be better than others. And Apple has so far had, like I said, it's not everything a smash success, but overall the quality has been quite good. Like, here or there, there was like something was like kind of middle of the ground, but yeah, overall it's been good.
I agree. Apple's strategy, at least from my perspective, is go for quality first. I mean, it looks to me like that's what's happening now. It doesn't mean that every single show or movie, like you were saying, Patrice, is going to be a big hit. But the likelihood that Apple will have success with the content that they're releasing is higher because they're going for quality first. Unlike Netflix, which is...
There's only three ways how you can succeed, I think, in this business currently. There's the Netflix approach, just be the first, the one, the everything. Even if you cancel everything after a season or two. But I mean, why do they do that? Because they need to keep people excited and interested. And usually after two, three seasons, it does taper off in some cases. Not every show, but a lot of shows do that. So that's one approach. Second one is kind of the Disney. You have already a lot of content. Like, and you have franchises, you have everything. You can just build on top of that. Not sure how successful Disney has been so far. I think they've lost a lot of money. But I think it's a valid approach. And then there's the Apple approach. If you don't have anything, don't go for everything and compete with Netflix. Go for quality and try to get people that way.
Yeah. And I think building up from quality has allowed them to take these bigger swings. Because, I mean, you know, the foundation has to be super expensive.
Each episode is crazy expensive.
I mean, the going with the legendary Godzilla monster franchise, that is got to be a gigantic risk financially.
Yeah, especially since they're also doing that in whatever 3D kind of for the Vision Pro.
Yeah, and I mean, did this show you how big of a risk this would have been? There are literally Warner Brothers movies on this IP. They passed on it. So. Yeah, Apple's taking on a lot here.
Yeah, and I'm not saying Apple is the only one who has quality content. I mean, very clearly not.
There's a lot of really good content on pretty much all the streaming services. Mm-hmm. Apple just right now has a more consistent track record.
Yeah.
And so what do we know, or what can we learn from that? You know, why are they so much more successful when they are very, very, very young in this particular business?
I think it's one thing. Apple, as always, takes the long-term view. Why a lot of these movie studios are taking the next quarter view. I mean, look at all the stuff that that Warner Brothers Discovery took a short-term write-off on. Well, now they have a huge retention rate problem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And since Bob Iger followed the Zasoff strategy, Disney Plus might be having that same problem soon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Where, since Apple brought it up on quality, and when you had price hikes there, they were warranted. They're not making these same short-term moves, mm-hmm, that are looking good in a quarter report, but are going to look really bad in a year or so.
Yeah. I mean, Apple has a different problem, though, mm-hmm, because, like, they cannot afford a really bad show.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a Disney or Netflix or one of the other bigger players that have enough content, one bad show amongst a million, it's not going to make a difference. But Apple has, I mean, they have, it's getting to the point where it's really hard to even keep track of everything Apple is doing.
So yeah,
that's, I think, a good sign. But I think they're not at the point yet where, like, a bad show wouldn't be a problem for them. Especially since we just talked about the press is so all over them, and any mistake they make is like a massive problem.
Yeah. Netflix rolls out some good things and garbage all the time. Yep. It's not headlines.
Yeah. I mean, some people might enjoy that garbage. I think it's not the problem. Like,
Sharknado, by all rights, should never have been successful on any level. And sure, yes. And yet Netflix was like, yeah, whatever, let's throw this out there. And and then it turned into this big thing with multiple movies. Uh-huh. And who could have seen that coming? Yeah. But yeah, that's yeah, that's not something Apple's going to
Shark
do.
Shark Week and all of that.
Like. Yeah.
But I think we come back to something I think it was Patrice said, or maybe Ben, I don't know. But I mean, do you really want to be associated with Sharknado?
No.
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 Unless you're cashing the check. But other than that, you know, but any of the projects that Apple has greenlit, I don't think anybody would be, they might be sorry they didn't succeed, but I don't think anybody would be embarrassed at being associated with them.
Well, I wonder if Sharknado could have had the same success if it had been released on Apple TV Plus, or if it would have been panned because it's so ridiculously stupid. And would that have been a detriment because it's on Apple and there's this level of expectation plus the ongoing thing where there's still people saying Apple is going to fail, they can't be in this space, mm-hmm, but putting on Netflix where you expect them to have a lot of lower quality content, it was in a place, mm-hmm, where it would be easier, I think, to accept. And because I don't think that's directly why Sharknado became such a big thing, but I think it didn't hurt it because it was on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. So Jeff, when you were talking, a couple things kind of pop together in my mind. Apple is under such a microscope for their new content because of the tech press. I mean, let's face it. Does the tech press really cover what Netflix is releasing next month? Not really. But they always cover what Apple's releasing because it's Apple. And so,
I mean, there is news outlets out there who do that. I mean, The Verge might actually.
Oh yeah, there's some, but not to the degree. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that was bouncing around in my head as Jeff was talking was just that they get all this coverage, just like the iPhone gets the coverage, but a lot of the other phones, a lot of the other devices, and all, when they come out with iterations, they get some, depending on who it is and how, you know, what the company's been able to write up. But it just feels like everything Apple does is under this crazy microscope, more so than just about anybody else out there. And there's always somebody like Ming-Chi Kuo looking to, you know, say, oh, here it comes. We've been waiting for this failure.
Yeah. It's a blessing and a curse. It brings you a lot of eyeballs. It brings you a lot of attention. It brings you a lot of like free marketing in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because if everybody's talking about it, you don't have to do much to get any message out there. But it also comes with a downside, as you said.
Jeff, what did you guys used to call it at the Mac Observer? The Apple is doomed clock or something?
Doomed.
Oh, Brian started that. It was the death knell.
The death knell, yes. Yeah, it still feels like that is maybe not quite, I mean, it'd be hard to kill Apple at this point in short term, but it just feels like there's always those naysayers out there that just are waiting to say, here it comes. Yeah, this is the one. We've been waiting for it. We knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, then, Chuck, how about if I trigger you a little bit?
Oh, please do, Jeff.
People are freaking out. Oops, I just put the wrong link in. All right, let's try this. There we go. People are freaking out because Apple turned off your privacy and security settings.
Did they?
No. Okay, so here's what happened.
Okay.
There were reports that started coming out after iOS 17 was released where people were saying, hey, my security settings, like iPhone analytics and location privacy settings, those had switched so that instead of blocking that information from being shared, it's now being shared. And it appears that maybe some people have had this issue. Apple has already said they're looking into it to try and figure out if this is a thing. And if it is, I'm sure they will fix it because Apple does not change your security and privacy settings with software updates. So what I'm curious to see is, and I haven't done much research into this because I haven't felt the need to. My privacy and security settings have not changed. Is this affecting people that are switching to a new phone? Or is this affecting people that are simply upgrading to iOS 17? And I don't have the answer to that. Regardless, though, it seems like it's a small number of iPhone users that are saying their settings have been changed.
If this is true, I mean, even if it's one person, yeah, okay, that's a problem. I can see that. It might not be as bad because I think significant locations are end-to-end encrypted. So yes, they might be included on some on-device stuff, and that could be a problem. But it's not, at least not sharing it widely, not easily accessible. At least, but I said, like, if it happened for one person, that's a problem. I can totally see that, because those are quite sensitive settings.
Okay, in some cases. Jeff. So you said you wanted to trigger me. Okay, so this is on you. Right. But if you click through the link, Misk on X, formerly Twitter, on September 26th, posted an important update. After some further investigation with several attempts to reproduce the issue, it appears this could simply be a rare edge case, and those location settings will not turn back on when upgrading to iOS 17. We regret the error, and we promise to do better in the future. It's always our goal to promote privacy in a world of big tech, and the best way to do this is to keep everyone honest, including ourselves. Second paragraph, in other words, please don't sue us. First paragraph, we are the Ming Chi Kuo of, you know, this issue.
You know, that's actually really cool on a couple levels. First, boom, Chuck does the smackdown. but then I like that when they realized, oh, yeah, we might have this wrong, they were very clear about we might have gotten this wrong. And yes, of course, it includes a please don't sue me wink, wink bit. But they came clean on their screw up. The other part of this is, why have I not seen the follow-up articles saying, yes, hey, this turned out to be another nothing burger? Like, so much so I didn't even know that other piece was there. That, now that's partly on me, because I didn't go look at their Twitter account, excuse me, their X account, because I have no interest on going to that site anymore. So I would not have seen that. Now, okay, if I were still doing the journalism thing, I would have gone and looked into that. So why didn't the people that are doing the journalism thing do that?
Yeah, but then at least put a banner up top and saying, hey, sorry, they said this probably is not happening.
Yeah.
Like, that's the minimum you could do.
I hate to say this, but this is why maybe, folks, you need to pay a little more attention to independent sources. Mm-hmm. And I'm patting us on the back, like us, because, you know, we will ask the question as opposed to trying to just do clickbait. We ask the questions. We do try to do follow-ups, you know, and we try to bring a sense of intelligence to the discussions. And that, and I'm not just talking about this show. I'm talking about all the shows that we're all involved in. You know, there are times we can do knee-jerk reactions, but I like to think that we do a little more balanced discussion of things.
I think we all know what happened. Like, the clickbait thing is written, it's posted. The retraction or the follow-up, whatever, is never gonna get as many hits anyway. And they're, we've already moved on to the next thing. So, like, to the next clickbaity thing. So why bother?
Yep.
I mean, we'll just say like it is. They care more about the ad revenue from an incorrect story than they do about getting it right.
On an organization level, probably, yes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about the individual. Like, can't say.
Yeah, I'm not quite ready to demonize the individuals. You're right, Patrice.
You know,
but
okay, Chuck. So from the insider perspective, and yes, I'm not on the inside anymore. You could see a lot where it was difficult for people who are writing articles to be able to do the follow-ups that should happen later on. And that's because this industry had changed from being, let's put out these well-thought-out pieces and in-depth analysis, to Google is basically driving the income for us, so we have to crank out as much content as possible to have a higher likelihood of bringing in a few pennies. And it makes it incredibly difficult to do the appropriate, to do the level of due diligence that we would expect. And I'm not saying that this is just how everyone in the Apple News community works. However, this is a reality in that space, and it's just really hard. So I would say that blaming a specific writer for not having followed up is not really fair, because there are already 10, 15, 20 stories down the road from this, because the business model, the management model is pushing to just get the next story out, get the next story out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get the story out as fast as possible. If there's something new, get it out like 5 seconds before it happened.
Right.
But if you're looking for content, then, and this is to editors and journalists alike, if you're looking for the content, this is one more post that you could make that would, you've already done part of the research into what this was. So now make a new post saying, hey, it's not a big deal. Or here's what the original people that called this out are now saying.
Yeah, but if you have to choose between, I can make another clickbait article that gets me 10,000 hits and I get like an ad rate for that, or I can do a story where I say, hey, we were wrong and this is happening, and I get like 500, because that's the reality. Which one do you choose from a business perspective? The 10,000 one.
I bet that if you use ChatGPT, you could come up with a clickbaity title that...
Okay, fair point. Fair
you know, you could clickbait this just as easily, Patrice, in the other direction. Jeff, you're right. Thank you. You lit me up. Yes.
Fair point.
I did my job well. You know who else does their job well? TSO Host. That's right. Here's the deal. TSO Host is absolutely awesome at website hosting and server systems and bandwidth, all the stuff that you need to make an operation like the British Tech Network run smoothly. And that's actually what's happening here. So they're leveraging what they do so well to help us do what we do. The resources that we need to host a website, have a place for all the podcast files to live, to do live streams, the bandwidth that goes along with that, that goes beyond what we would be able to manage on our own. And they're very generously providing us with those resources. Without TSO Host's help, we could not do what we do. And we genuinely appreciate their generosity. So thank you, TSO Host. Now, I just said thank you. Now it's your turn. Go on social media. Thank TSO Host for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. It's super fast, super easy. Just do it. It's good karma. And it's important that we let them know, excuse me, that we appreciate that they are here helping us. It is amazingly generous on their part. And so all you need to do, just go give them some love on social media. The other side of it, though, is you at some point may need to buy a domain name. So why not use TSO Host? You at some point might decide, hey, I need to have a website hosted. TSO Host is here. Go get your domain name. Go get your hosting package. Throw it in your cart. And then add the discount code BTN20, and you're going to get 20% off that order, because you are part of the BTN family, and they're just spreading the love. So get yourself a discount on their services. Go give them some online love for being here and supporting us. And thank you, TSO Host, for being here. Speaking of support, Patrice, I need your support, please. Can you tell people where to find the chat?
Of course I can. So we have a really awesome live chat that we use every week when we're recording, which like is Fridays 4 p.m. UK time for the Mac show, and also Thursdays 7 p.m. UK time for the big show. So if you're into the non-Apple side of tech, if you want to talk about space or computer chips or other interesting tech topics, whatever that is, or tech adjacent topics like we talked about Picard yesterday, or not Picard, like
Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart, yes. And this is a new memoir, which is tech related. And then you just head over to chat.bridgetechnetwork.com, and that's it. You can talk to us live. Showtimes change every now and then, like today. So check our social media, check our website. That's probably the fastest way to get updated on that. But let's say you are listening to this in the recorded form, like on your favorite podcast player of choice, you know, on a website, wherever you're getting that content, maybe in the future, Vision Pro, who knows. And you want to see the links to the stories that we talked about, the links to the cool things that are coming up, like any of that. There's an easy way to still get to that. Live chat, of course, does not work. That is live, that's gone, that's done, that's recorded, it's passed. As long as you can't do time travel, that's not gonna it's not gonna work. But you can head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, and then there is a little calendar that pops up. You put in a date, and that date I'm gonna tell you, which is today's date as we're recording this, the 6th of October 2023, October 6th, 2023. And if you put that in, you will see everything that we talked about.
Awesome. Patrice, I loved that you snuck a Vision Pro reference in. And I have to
keep it interesting always.
I love the idea of someone sitting back on their couch, and here's Chuck, 3 times life size, just floating in their living room. So it's going to be amazing.
It's going to be awesome.
It is. It is.
And then he can boop him on his nose.
We should all get to boop Chuck on his nose.
Okay, let's just leave that.
This has gotten weirder.
Did it just get hot in here?
Oh, it did. Hey, Chuck. Boop.
Okay, let's move on.
It would be really great. Cool things other than Chuck.
I see what you're trying to do there, and yet, hey Chuck, boop.
Oh my god!
Well, it's been great having Chuck on the show today. Yeah. All right.
I guess that might make it a little harder.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, let's do some cool things. Who has the first one besides booping Chuck?
I'm going to jump in because I want to redirect this conversation real quick. I just did a Mac Voices briefing on this not too long ago. This is the STM Dux backpack. This is a 30-liter backpack that has the identifying characteristic of being able to side load from either side. So you can zip out either side, depending on whether you carry it on your right shoulder or your left shoulder, or just, you know, lay it on the table and open up both sides. You also, inside it has basically shelves is what they call them, but they're dividers so that you can resize the inside of the pack to fit things that you want, or just take them out completely and just have this one big cavern inside. I really like this because it's something different. It changes the way that I looked at, you know, the things that I carry. It also has, though, a dedicated space for your iPad and your MacBook laptop that is a suspended sleeve inside. And that just, to me, is always a critical thing because I see, and I'm not going to call any names, but I see the other backpacks that out there that claim they're tech backpacks. And yet if you slide your laptop down in and then you were to sit it down hard, you've got about that much padding between the concrete and the device you just spent all that money on. This, it's suspended way above it. They never get there. And so is it an inexpensive backpack? Yes. But in my opinion, all the good tech backpacks are. They're going to cost a little money because they have things like suspended sleeves. They have better padding. They have better protection. The one concern I had about this one, and if you look at it, you might have it too, Because it is a bit more of a formed backpack, it really doesn't collapse down much, if at all, because of that big cavernous inside. You might be concerned about it fitting under an airline seat. So I took it on a couple flights, and it fit just fine, no problems at all. So listen, I'm a big STM fan of everything they do. I get teased a lot at some of the conferences, including by the STM people, because I have one STM bag that was back from the Macworld days that only gets used for conferences. So like even the weatherproofing on the zipper is still intact, because I pulled this out for only once, twice, maybe three times a year, go to that event, use it, and then bring it home. And it, all that time, you know, it's held up well, and it does what I want it to do. And I've had other STM products that are just as good. So if you're looking for a backpack, maybe you want to consider something a little less conventional, take a look at this. It's a really good one.
Chuck, the link isn't loading for me. So how much does this cost?
Oh, I'm sorry. The link here is, the cost is $189.99. Oh, Jeff, I'm sorry. You're right. It's not. I will throw a link in the chat, a good one. It may be an ugly long one, but it'll be definitely good.
STM Ducks 30-liter premium tech backpack, carry-on travel laptop backpack, fits 17-inch laptops. Does that sound like?
Yes, that's it. Yeah, customizable storage shelves, water-resistant luggage pass-through, et cetera, et cetera. $189.99 on Amazon.
Very cool.
So, and it comes in some interesting colors too. So be sure to check those out.
Oh, that's some colors. That was just black.
Yeah, that's cool.
They gave me the black one to test out, but you know,
I've had good luck with STM products in the past, and I had for a long time one of their padded laptop bags. And I don't anymore, because I had a friend who borrowed it and loved it so much. I was like, you know, I think it's yours. the happiness that I see you getting from this bag means you should just keep it. So I guess now maybe I should look at another STM bag.
Check it out. Especially Jeff, you know, the side loading, I mean, it kind of depends on how you use your pack and what you carry with it. But if you're carrying tech and clothes or something like that, and I know you do a lot of outdoor stuff, this might be a really good choice for you.
So cool. All right. I need to check it out. Awesome. All right, Ben, tell us about your cool thing.
Well, it is the new series Gen V on Amazon Prime. Gen V is a spinoff of The Boys universe, the ultra-violent superhero show. While it's set in that universe, it has a very different vibe. It is set at a superhero university that is also owned by the Vought company. Essentially it's definitely a college show, but it has like what would be a college only for superheroes. So you have like the College of Crime Fighting. You have other academic paths where the ones who aren't cut out to be crime fighters go into like some kind of superhuman acting or that type of thing.
Or science or something like
You know, there's also some thought there's a bigger mystery here, because they're actually doing some very on point experimenting. It also gets into other things like, people of certain demographics, like the the main character is a poor African American. There is also a really interesting character who is played by two different actors, because this character can shift genders on the fly.
I've watched the first episode of this.
Yeah.
And the first part of the episode, I'd say like the first that half of the episode,
to say the least.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. The whole beginning of the episode was like, holy crap. But by about halfway into the episode, I was starting to lose interest and I was thinking, oh, this is disappointing because I really want to enjoy the show. But by the time we get to the end of the episode, I'm like, okay, they pulled it through and I'm ready to watch episode two, which I haven't had time to do yet.
Yeah, in fact, a lot of the reason I like this show, it has some of the same strengths that, say, Wednesday would. Because you have that strong relation between the main character and her roommate.
Yeah, there's a scene where the roommate, and so I'm not going to do any spoilers, but there's a scene where the roommate is like alone and someone comes to visit her and then they have this whole interaction and I'm watching that and I'm like, this is exactly what that interaction would be like if this was the real world. And it's very uncomfortable. Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's very, The Boys. And
it has a lot more serious tone to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which is good because The Boys is really ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of absolutely ridiculous stuff that's happening here, but it's kind of
grounded in that ridiculousness.
Yeah, and yes, and getting to see just what sort of impacts their lives are having on them, meaning the superpowered people, the impact of just being who they are, what that does to them. I mean, that's interesting.
And you're not seeing Supes who have been for like years in the limelight. You're seeing 20 teenagers or 20 somethings who their parents did something very, very messed up to them. Having to deal with the fallout of that while figuring out who the hell they are.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Ultra violent, dealing with real world issues, and ultra violent.
Did we say ultra violent?
Yeah. Okay, cool. Patrice.
Yeah, mine is not... It goes actually in the same... It goes very well with Ben's because it's in the same general direction. It's not ultra-violent. It's a book. It's Armada from Ernest Cline. I do not remember who recommended this to me or whether I found it on... Because I follow Ernest Cline. Maybe that's how I found. So Ernest Cline is the author of Ready Player One, Ready Player Two, like those, I think, the most well-known books. Like the whole, like it's very like pop culture driven books. This is kind of in the same direction. It's definitely no Ready Player One. I think, I mean, it's not to be expected. Some people expected it too and were disappointed. I really loved this book. So it's basically, there's this, well, a college kid, I think. Yeah, like, or high school, college, something like that. I think he just graduated or is about to graduate. I think it's about to graduate college from Berkeley. So, like, Zach Lightman, he's kind of dreamer, like, working at a, like, at the, like, not a comic book store, but like a store, for, like, kind of like a Radio Shack or something like that, like a gamer store kind of on the side and going to school and kind of, yeah, living his own world, not really connecting. Like the two things he's really like deeply into is one, video games or computer games, and two, especially like a couple special ones, like Armada is actually one of the games, and his dad, who died tragically and mysteriously in a like explosion of like some factory. And he thinks, oh yeah, well, I mean, what's wrong with that? Like nothing. Like he discovers that his dad had some really weird, like some really weird theories about like governments and aliens, and the government is using computer games and arcade games and so on to do like to prepare humanity for war with aliens, and like all the movies that we know and the games that we know, like a lot of them like Space Invader and so on, all of that is kind of preparation for that, like over decades. And everybody thought he was crazy, and he thinks his dad is crazy, but he kind of still believes in it. And then something happens. And the world changes. And that's the book. I'm not going to tell you more because then I would spoil it. But that's kind of the beginning. And then something happens and it gets even crazier from there.
I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens.
All right. I'm intrigued. And I really enjoyed Ready Player One. Still haven't read Ready Player Two.
It's those are my two favorite books, to be honest. Like currently, I've listened to them a couple of times. By the way, this is, if you have this on Audible, it's again Will Wheaton.
Oh, awesome!
So that should help you with your decision. Mm. He's really good at this. He's really good at this type of book. Like it's again like a lot of pop culture, and like video games and public references to things, and like what you would expect from him, kind of. So. But it's a different story. Like it has nothing to do, well, very little to do with Ready Player One, which is good. Like it shouldn't.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like the idea of the books being able to stand on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's that really, really good book. I like basically listened to it like straight through. It was so good. It's that I saw some reviews, like some people didn't appreciate it too much, but I really enjoyed it. It was nominated for Best of Science Fiction, like on Goodreads for a while. And so, yeah, this book has been out a couple of years already, so it's not a new book. Like it's been, I think, 8 years. So
okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm really hoping there is a follow-up, but I don't think so.
Well, great, another book on my list, and I'm not complaining. Yeah. But there we go, another book on my list. Cool. All right. I guess that means it's my turn now. And
what's your Lego thing?
Yes.
It's the Viking Village.
Oh.
Just released. This is one that came from the Lego Ideas project where people build or design a Lego kit and then everyone gets to vote on mm-hmm. whether or not they feel like it should be made into an actual kit. And yeah, you have to get at least 10,000 votes before it can be considered, and then it has to go through this whole screening process, which includes, are there licensing issues, and what's the viability of being able to produce this kit? What sort of changes need to be made so that it complies with Lego's building standards and just all these things. And this one got through the whole thing, and it's a cool little kit. When I say little kit,
it's actually quite big.
Yeah. It's like 2,100 pieces. And, and so you get to have the longhouse for the chieftain. You get to have the metalsmith who's going to make the swords and stuff. There's like a lookout tower and a little hidden cave, and you're just right on the waterfront. And it's a really cleverly designed kit. and it's only $129, which means that it really blows my standard price right out of the water. Because so my guideline is a dime a brick. And but then the number of minifigures you have will increase the cost. So at a dime a brick plus four minifigures, this should be easily a $200 kit. And it's $129.99.
Yeah. I found the sizes. It's 9.5 inches or 24 centimeters high, 18 or 46 centimeters wide, and 10 or 26 centimeters deep. It's quite big.
Wow. Yeah, it's a big kit. And it looks really nice too. It's really well designed. So this is on my want list. It's not one that I could have even if I bought it on release day, because it just came out like this week. And in the chat, Chuck is saying, when is it not on my list? That's fair. I like my Lego.
I was responding to Ben's comment, but it fits.
Time to plunder. When is it not?
Yeah.
Also valid.
Works too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Works both ways.
Yep. All right. So, let's go do some building.
Plundering.
Let's do some plunder.
Let's go plunder. Let's get ready to plunder. All right. So with that, Ben, where can people find you?
Well, Mr. Jeffrey, you can find me at Ben Raythig on your social media of choice. I think we're at the X Spout Tadan thread or something.
the mass to spout a thread.
Yes. Yep. You can also find me at Raythig.tech for my writings. On Tuesday nights on Mac Voices, Mr. Chuck Joyner. Thursday nights when I'm not on at a friend's birthday party on In Touch with iOS with Mr. Dave Ginsburg. And then Thursday and Friday mornings here on the British Tech Network.
Awesome. And it looked like you had a lot of fun at the party last night.
Oh, I'm paying for it.
Yeah. Well, that's why we didn't shout today on the show. Yeah.
Oh, please don't shout.
Patrice, where can people find you? And speak up so Ben can hear you.
Yes, I will do. No, I'm not that. You can find me here every week on Thursdays on the Big Show, on Fridays on the Mac Show on British Tech Network. You can find out everything, like everything I'm doing, all the social media links, all the projects, all the podcasts, everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com. And if you want to join a friendly Mastodon instance, head over to techhangout.social, where, for example, British Tech Network is also auto-posting now all the new episodes when they come out. So follow at British Tech at techhangout.social, and you will see whenever there's a new episode.
Awesome. And Chuck, where can people find you?
Well, Ben, you can find me at macvoices.com. That's where we talk to lots of interesting people about all kinds of things. Recently, we've been focusing a little more on the new Apple hardware and new operating systems, but there's more stuff coming. I specifically did one episode that talks about what I use to protect my gear and why I think it's important that maybe you should do the very same, because it just doesn't cost that much and it can make a lot of difference. On pretty much all the socials that Ben tried to reference, and he may have missed one or two, you can find me as at Chuck Joyner. Thank you, Jeff.
Awesome. All right. Social medias for me. Jake Gamut on everything. I'm active on Instagram and and Mastodon right now. Then for shows, most Tuesdays, Chuck lets me join in on Mac Voices Live, so thank you for that. Then on Thursdays, Dave Ginsburg lets me join in on In Touch with iOS. And then on the British Tech Network, Thursday for the Mac shows. No, for the big shows. Friday for the Mac show. They all blend together after a while. Then Brian Chaffin and I do the Context Machine. This week's episode is already out. And then other shows along the way. So with that, wow, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. What a wonderful way to kick off the weekend. And I'm glad I got to kick it off with you. Everyone that's watching, listening live, participating in the chat, thank you for being here as well. All of you that watch or listen to the shows later, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. TSO hosts, thank you for being here and supporting us. Everyone, give them some online love. If you are not already, listening, there we go, wow, to the daily news show, you need to start doing that. It's great. And then start throwing some money into it too so we can keep that show going. And Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thank you for making sure we have people for shows. And I'm pretty sure I got through all of the thank yous. So with that, I'll say join us next Thursday for the big show. Come back again on Friday for the Mac show. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.